Creative Babble.
Hey guys, it's me, Javier. I'm busy working on the next series, which hopefully should be out next week. But in the meantime, I released this episode of the Ponzi Playbook, you know, my third podcast. And this one has pretend written all over it. So I thought, you know, while I'm working on the next series, take a listen. If you haven't listened to the Ponzi Playbook, this one's an epic, epic episode because we talk about a lot of Ponzi schemes, but we never get to hear from the Ponzi schemer themselves. And in this episode, you actually get to hear a full confession. So if you like it, subscribe to the Ponzi Playbook. It's a different podcast than Pretend, but I think it's a lot of fun, and I think you'll like it. And at the end of the episode, stick around because I'm going to play you a clip of the Film Nuts podcast. I was a guest recently, and they invited me to talk about my favorite movie, Catch Me If You Can. So I'm going to play you a clip of that podcast at the end of this episode. All right, here's the timepiece, gentlemen, from the Ponzi Playbook. Enjoy.
Today, Javier, we're going to be talking about the timepiece, gentlemen.
Oh, wow. I'm picturing a guy wearing a monocle. You know, he has this, like, this gold watch encrusted in diamonds. He's chivalrous, courteous, honorable man.
Honorable man, opening doors for all of the women, and so polite, right? He is the timepiece, gentleman. But let's just say this name is riddled with irony, because the timepiece gentleman, the subject of today's show, this guy instead is a highly argumentative, foul-mouthed, brash, heavily tatted, I mean, tight, black, t-shirt wearing, Lambo driving, Ponzi scheming, watch-stealing man.
Oh man, this timepiece gentleman. By the way, his name is Anthony Farrar. And there are tons of podcasts, YouTube videos, TikToks, blogs, subreddits, you name it, about this guy, okay? But we could not help ourselves. We had to do this story because it is incredible. This is not just a story about a Ponzi schemer who wears watches or is selling watches. No, what's interesting about the story is how this guy got caught and what he did afterwards.
All right, everybody. I think it's time I finally put out a video and address everything that's going on. I can't hide from it any longer. I can't just avoid it. All right, guys. So day six video, here it is. I'm still doing everything I can to pay for it, but it's obvious, it's apparent that there's a large community out there that doesn't want that to happen. They would rather me end my life, end up in prison, do whatever it takes to not be able to pay you guys back. I'm not going that route. I'm not going to succumb to the pressure. You know, my phone does not stop ringing all day long. Point where I've actually got another number. Any of my clients that are out here watching, I've reached out to about a third of you guys. I'm going to get to the rest of you in the next day or so.
That's right, Javier. We're going to hear a full confession from the Ponzi schemer himself.
And how rare is that, Neil, that we actually get to hear from the Ponzi schemer confessing? I mean, this is wild.
It's totally wild.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, like every classic Ponzi schemer, living this lavish lifestyle. But in the end, he told Business Insider that he was living, eating canned tuna, showering at a Gold's Gym, and sleeping at a lifeguard stand on Venice Beach. He even told them that I hadn't had sushi for 3 months.
Oh, the poor guy.
Yeah. And we're going to hear this whole thing unfold in this one episode. It's amazing.
What a gentleman.
So, Neil, tell us, like, kind of unpack this for us. Tell us how this scheme unfolded.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Javier. I love watches. And, well, Anthony Farrar, he loved watches. Probably still does love watches, but as we'll see a little later, he's probably not going to be wearing such nice watches for a long time.
He's wearing metal watches.
he's wearing metal on both wrists.
That's right. Double-barreled watch.
Double-barreled, yeah, that doesn't tell time. So this guy, he's accused of defrauding his clients out of at least $3 million. So we're not talking about a huge number, but $3 million in watches. Okay. He collected these luxury watches from customers in exchange for promising that he would sell those watches on a consignment basis and take no more than a 5% fee when the watch was sold. At least that's according to the authorities. But instead, he would sell these very high-end watches, which include watches like, you know, Rolex Daytonas, Patek Philippe, Audemars Piguet, very, very expensive watches. And he would just fund his lavish Los Angeles lifestyle, driving that red Lambo and his Ducati Italian motorcycle. And like a lot of Ponzi schemers, he would just go head over to Las Vegas and gamble.
Wow. And so, like you said, you're a watch aficionado yourself, right? We went to lunch the other day. I saw your watch. It's awesome. Like, I never got into such an expensive hobby. But how much do these watches cost? I mean, like, give me an idea.
Well, let me first address the expensive hobby thing you said. This Ponzi Playbook podcast is bringing in so much dough that, I mean, what else am I going to do with all this extra money?
To zero. Yeah.
Well, it brings a lot of joy to make. But the watches that Anthony Ferrar was dealing in, I mean, these watches could go for $100,000, $150,000, some even more. I mean, watches can go up to $500,000, even over $1 million if they're extremely rare and they have jewels and things like that. So yeah, today's episode is going to be awesome, Javier.
And it's not awesome because we're going to be talking about watches, because unlike you, Neil, most of us are not into watches. What's really, really interesting about this is that we have so much audio to comb through of this guy trying to explain himself, trying to crawl out of this mess that he created. And it is such a rare opportunity. I mean, we've done what, like over 15 episodes now. We have yet to hear from the Ponzi schemer.
That's right.
And that's what we're going to get into today, right?
So this is a miracle of a story, right? We have a very, very content-driven Ponzi schemer who is willing to say it all. I'm Neil McTighe.
I'm Javier Leyva.
And this is the Ponzi Playbook.
I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So Neil, right before the break, we were talking about Anthony Ferrar and his persona as a timepiece gentleman. I mean, this is a guy who's really handsome. I mean, they used to call him Mark Wahlberg back in high school.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he kind of looks like him a little bit, right?
He's cut. He's a handsome dude, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he's a good looking dude. And he seems like a tough guy. You know what I mean? Like a no bullshit type of guy. He wears tight shirts and a baseball cap.
Works out all the time. Yep. You know, flexing. You know, biceps always popped.
Yeah. And the whole thing, you know, we started out talking about how is this rough and tough guy
calling him the timepiece gentleman. And how did he get into the whole watch world? And that question kind of pulled me in a little bit. So I wanted to do some research on this guy, Anthony Ferrara. Where did he come from? And how did he end up selling watches of all things? Because he seems like the most unlikely character to sell watches.
That's true. Most of the time we think of these, you know, stuffy retail shops in fancy malls, and you go in and you're like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, I usually tend to think of a grandpa kind of guy, you know?
Well, you know, just a very elite boutique sort of, you know, exclusive world, not this hard ass sort of brash Lambo world. But the watch world is filled with all sorts of people with money.
And this is not a guy who came from generational wealth, okay? This is not like a guy that he's just, you know, living the life and he has all this extra money. No, this guy came from nothing, okay?
Yeah, he came from Casio watches, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So I wanted to read more about his past. Where did he come from? So it turns out that Anthony Ferrara got his first watch when he was 17 years old. And that was around the time that he pulled two butcher knives on his dad.
Are you kidding me?
Right off the bat. Yeah, it just tells you that this guy is not coming from a good home, right?
Two butcher knives. I mean, usually houses only have one. So, gosh, what a house.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of daddy issues there.
So why did Anthony pull out those knives on his dad?
Well, according to Anthony, he just pulled out those knives in self-defense. He wasn't planning on harming his father or anything like that. He says his father hit him in the face for not fixing a fence.
Good grief.
How crazy is that? Yeah. And, you know, every character has like an origin story. And I feel like maybe Anthony Ferrara is who he is, or maybe faced a lot of trauma early on because his twin brother happened to die in a motorcycle crash.
Yeah.
So I could imagine that that was like a really, you know, defining moment in his life.
Yeah. Twin brother, right? Not just any brother, a twin brother.
Yeah.
And we see that Anthony Ferrara is obsessed with motorcycles.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that? Yeah. It is kind of weird, right?
It is kind of weird. And it's a machismo culture.
Yeah. And, you know, Anthony Ferrara, just like we just described, he was a troubled kid. Even as an adult, you know, he was in and out of jail for DUIs or for getting into fights at bars or for high speed chases with the police. I mean, so this guy has like a long, long track record of being on the opposite end of the law.
By 2018, Ferrara, you know, he was freshly out of prison after yet another DUI. And during that time he was in prison, he missed the death of his mother, and he also missed the birth of his son. So let's add even more trauma and complexity to an already, you know, troubled man. But there's a little surprising twist that happens a little later in his life. Can you tell our listeners about this, Javier?
Well, it was right around this time, Neil, that Ferrara started getting the taste for watches and luxury watches. And that's how he really got into this world. And as we know, watches are very expensive. For Anthony Ferrara did not come from money. In fact, you know, he's probably doesn't have much money. So what does he do? Well, he starts working as a dancer at a gay bar in Dallas. And so he was giving, quote, exotic massages to clients under the alias. What did I say?
You said exotic.
Oh,
even though they're kind of exotic.
In my head, I said erotic. Okay.
That's what they call it, an exotic dancer, right?
Exotic dancer. That's probably where I got it from. Yeah. But it was.
These are happy endings.
Erotic. Yes. But actually, no, it is not a happy ending.
No.
But during this time period, I mean, things are good, right? He's making some extra cash with his secret side hustle. And this is when he becomes the timepiece gentleman. The timepiece gentleman is born, ladies and gentlemen.
He's born. As I mentioned before, Javier, I love watches. I wish I could afford some of the watches that this guy was selling. I mean, they're incredible, beautiful, beautiful watches. And there was this recent report by, you know, Boston Consulting Group, so a very reputable consulting group. And the average price of these really high-end pieces over the last 5 years, I mean, it's grown by 20%. So it's a booming business. It is a multi-billion dollar business and it's a global business. Anthony Farrar, who loved watches himself and loved wearing them while he had butcher knives in his hand, but he decided that he was going to make money flipping these things. He would buy them and identify prospects who might be interested in purchasing these high-end watches, because the pre-owned luxury watch industry, that's what was blowing up, because there was so much demand and not enough supply, particularly for Rolex watches. So he was able to sort of go to steakhouses or fancy places throughout Dallas. He'd identify people wearing high-end watches, and then he would present his sort of, let's say, briefcase full of expensive watches and make the deal, you know? And he was using Instagram and Craigslist. He was starting to drive content online. He was building a brand, and it was just this sort of unregulated business model. And these folks then would consign watches with him. So he'd sell them watches, but he'd then consign them and he'd just make his commission. It's a really fascinating business model.
Well, I just love how back of the trunk this whole business approach is. It's like he shows up at these bars. I just love that visual, right? Like he shows up at this steakhouse in Dallas and he's looking around, right? And he's like, all right, that guy, he has a nice watch. He's drinking, you know, some high-end top shelf liquor. Let's go spark up a conversation. And I mean, that just tells you the kind of hustle that this guy brought to the watch world, right?
It does. And you know, you mentioned he didn't come from money. So he has good looks. He's confident. He is intelligent. So he's able to leverage all of that. And he doesn't want to live the life he came from. He wants to surpass it. He wants to be, you know, he wants to be rich. He wants to be free from all of that. And he also wants to be free from his troubled past, his past that involved spending time in jail. He just wants to be a successful business person. So watch flipping, you could make a ton of money doing that. You know, you could buy a watch at $30,000, find somebody who wants it, and flip it for $40,000, and you get, you know, your commission on that. But we know here he's on the Ponzi playbook. So what is he doing?
Yeah.
He's not, you know.
Nothing you just described right now is illegal. This is not a Ponzi scheme. This consignment business is a legit business, and he's taking advantage of a supply and demand issue, right? Like, people want these watches and they're willing to pay top dollar. So Anthony Farrar went from hustling at steakhouse bars to actually setting up shop on social media. And this is where this guy flips this whole industry upside down, right? Because this went from being grandpa's business to being this young guy who's out on social media doing what no one has ever done before, showing how the watch market business works in real time. I mean, you're seeing this guy on his YouTube channel, his Instagram, his TikTok, and he's showing you deals and how he's making deals with clients, getting their watches, selling them. This guy was a marketer. He wasn't just a watch dealer. He was an amazing social media master, I think.
All these excuses. Look, if you don't want to do the deal, just tell me and I'll get back on a flight and go home and then stop wasting my time.
I think you're right. And in some of those videos, he has folks scheduling appointments with him at his shop, and they bring in very, very high-end fakes. I mean, these watches, the fakes themselves of, you know, say a $40,000 Rolex watch, but it's a fake Rolex. They're so good, they would, you know, fool most people. So these folks schedule appointments with Anthony. They come into his shop. Anthony is sitting there. I mean, he's packing heat.
That's bullshit. Okay.
Just wrap it up.
It doesn't matter.
You gotta go.
You gotta go.
I call the police.
He's got that tight black t-shirt on. These folks are locked in. He's got like a bodyguard. And then he's just got this foul mouth. And then he's there with, like, you know, inspecting the watch. He's like, yo, motherfucker, this is fake. And then he gets in an argument. And then the people are like, no, it's not. It's like, and then he's like, I'm not giving it back to you. Get out of here. And then he's posting this on social media. He's live streaming it. The dude is nuts. And he's, like you said, he's doing all of that to get eyeballs, and it's working. He's getting tons of views on his videos, and he's frankly, he's also getting some street cred, right? Because he's like, oh, he can spot fakes among the hardest of fakes to spot.
And Neil, you and I have talked about this in the past. It's like, if you have a podcast or a TikTok channel or anything that's successful on social media, you all of a sudden become the authority, right? And it's called authority marketing. We talked about this before. And Anthony Ferrar became the authority on these watches. He earned people's trust. I mean, could you imagine how much trust it would take for you to ship your $100,000 watch FedEx to some guy that you saw on the internet? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, think about that for a second. That takes a lot of trust. And Anthony Ferrar was building that trust. I mean, he was taking these high-end watches, holding it for his clients and trying to resell them. I mean, I know this is a Ponzi playbook, and I know how that we all know how this story will end, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that he earned people's trust on social media and he gained a lot of expensive watches, and there was a lot of money passing through his desk.
It sure was.
I do very good business and I always keep my word. I always pay my debts.
You see, Javier, there's a real problem with social media. Social media is all about keeping up appearances. Are you going to just post a picture of yourself sitting at home on the weekend in your modest, you know, little apartment? No, he got stuck because he was blowing so much dough on this lifestyle, which was initially derived from success in business, that he started having to pay these massive bills for these video shoots for this image of success. That image of success is what was getting him the higher end clients. So he kind of screwed himself because suddenly he has to buy the Lambo. He has to have the fancy this, the fancy that. He has to throw lavish parties because his Instagram feed has to look sensational. His YouTube video has to look rich.
Right.
Because how is a multi-billion dollar...
It's like a chicken and an egg situation, right?
Yeah,
so here you have this guy, Anthony Ferrar, who has nothing, okay? He has nothing, but he has to appear like he has everything. And so in order to keep up that appearance, you have to kind of invest in the business, right? Like his storefront is the internet. And if you see this guy with a tight t-shirt and muscles, but he's driving a Toyota Camry, you're not going to send him your $100,000 watch, right?
That's right. You're going to send him your $100,000 watch if he has a brand new Lambo or he's showing himself in videos eating $2,000 plates of sushi.
Right.
Because that guy is successful.
So how do you pay for all that stuff, right?
You kind of have to borrow
from the funds, right?
You have to borrow from the funds. This is what I call an unintentional Ponzi. The guy wanted to grow and build an amazing, successful business. He then got totally over his head because all of his success was directly tied to how good he was on social media, to how confident and strong his public image was. And he had to spend money to keep that image up, because if he didn't, it was going to fail. At least that's what he convinced himself of.
Yeah, but man, once you get the taste
and you know.
Yeah, the taste, you know.
And you don't have to give the erotic massages anymore.
So Anthony Ferrar was showing this like lifestyle that was incredible, right? And that was his storefront, right? TikTok was his storefront. Instagram was his storefront. But in order to be really legitimate, this guy had to open up a storefront kind of in the epicenter of luxury, right? And that was Beverly Hills.
That's where I want to be.
Now he has a brick and mortar store selling these watches, and it really legitimizes him, right?
It sure does. I mean, he's internet famous, but now he's, you know, set his roots.
Neil, business is good for Anthony Ferrar. I mean, it is. He's set up a legitimate business. He's a marketing powerhouse. He has a storefront in Beverly Hills. But, you know, he has the flair for the dramatics sometimes, you know?
He sure does.
You know what they say? What do they say? P.T. Barnum once said that there's no such thing as bad publicity. Anthony Ferrar had to shake things up a little bit. And one day, his followers online, they couldn't find him anymore. He wasn't posting any more videos. In fact, they call it the blackout, where he was just gone. And I mean, let's just imagine, Neil, you just set this guy your watch, okay? And he's no longer online.
With some consignment contract, right? That says, I'll give you 5%. And it's like, okay.
What are you thinking right now? What are you thinking if that was your watch?
I am scared out of my mind that I just got scammed.
Yeah. I mean, some of his customers thought that maybe he just took their money and just ran with it. But rest assured, it was just a publicity stunt. Okay. He says it was a publicity stunt to promote a charity that he was working on.
Oh,
yeah. It just tells you the kind of guy that this is. And if he's capable of doing this, well, then we know that there are bigger hits coming.
Anthony Farrar is living this, you know, he's living this high life. I mean, there's even a video of him doing donuts in this Audi A8 in an Office Depot parking lot. I mean, the car is worth almost 200K. This guy is spending tons of money. But the truth is, he was working on slim margins on those watches. He wasn't making the huge profits that he, you know, was hoping to make. So he was trying to fund this lavish lifestyle on these slim margins. And the result was, is he was just losing money like crazy. So Anthony, instead of admitting that the business was failing or declaring bankruptcy, what does he do? He comes up with a solution. And this solution is ingenious. I really do give him credit, but it is plain and simple fraud, and it's plain and simple crime.
Yeah, I mean, I could only imagine what would happen if all these watches just kind of disappeared one day.
Ooh.
Maybe his troubles just go away. And one night it did.
Four masked men, they pulled out their guns, they tied him up, demanding they show him, he show them rather, where his watches are.
Anthony Farrar says that police found him shaking in his underwear with his hands and feet zip tied.
What kind of underwear?
Seek Calvin Klein.
Calvin Klein, tight, white, fresh.
And Neil, we actually have a news clip from after this home invasion. Let's play it.
Multiple demands of where's the backpack, where's the briefcase. So they knew what they were looking for. And I showed them to a couple of decoys that we have set up around the place. And they zip tied my hands behind my back. And then they left out my patio door, told me to wait about 5 minutes or they'd be back.
That was quite a dramatic clip from Anthony Farrar. It's almost as if it were rehearsed. And I wonder, because these folks didn't take much, just a little jewelry and a backpack with some relatively inexpensive watches. They didn't take millions of dollars. And that's because Farrar was setting up his huge social following for this idea that he was constantly in danger, constantly under threat. And he was setting up the idea that, folks, he might just lose millions of dollars of watches, even if he has bodyguards, guns, safes, because these people want to steal those watches. And if that's the case, that would be an easy out of this scheme. Javier, that's not the only time that somebody pointed a gun at him, or so he says.
Yeah, there's been other reports of gunmen going after some of his associates, and it was always looming over this possibility that, you know, this is a very high-stake business, you know, almost like a heist.
Yeah, almost like he's in the drug business, you know, he's like a cartel. There was no break-in. It's fake. Yeah, as you said, Javier, one of his associates was allegedly robbed at gunpoint, and allegedly Anthony Farrar and his business, that is, lost $1.1 million worth of watches to this robbery. But that robbery, just like the house invasion, that was all a farce. It was designed for him to get off the hook for owing those people for the watches. He could then make a bogus insurance claim on the one side. He could stall repayments to his clients who were owed those watches. And he may be able to get out of this terrible situation he found himself in, which was, you know, being in debt and losing a ton of money in order to keep this business afloat. Javier, don't you have a really incredible clip of Anthony Farrar talking about this that you could share with our listeners?
And what's fascinating about this guy is he documents everything. So let's play the clip.
I made a lot of dumb mistakes. I even lied in that message about a robbery, you know, hoping to cover it up even more. I didn't want people thinking I was a fraud, a fake. You know, I got accustomed to this lifestyle, and getting that type of attention, it ruined me.
So, Neil, you're starting to see how this whole thing starts unraveling, right? So earlier we were just talking about, like, yeah, he has to borrow some of this money from his clients in order to keep up appearances. But now it's kind of consuming him, right? He not only has the sports car, but he has an alcohol problem. He has a cocaine problem. He has a gambling problem, and then a very expensive sex worker problem. Okay. This guy is living it up, and it's just a downward spiral.
Ouch.
And this is where it all just comes crashing. And let's just hear him talk about it. Let's just let him talk about this.
The stuff I did was wrong. Spending people's money, you know, living above my means, living this flex lifestyle, all that stuff was wrong. I've been digging myself this hole, and it's a $5 million hole. Yes, it's true. I'm $5 million in debt. You know, about $3 million of that debt is to two big clients of mine, one who acted as an investor, and I used his money to fund my lifestyle.
Javier, before this incredible confession from a Ponzi schemer, customers were already starting to worry that they'd never see their money or their watches again. One customer was so pissed off that he sent an armored car directly to that Beverly Hills office.
Wow.
And he was going to go in and he was going to get that cash. But he left with absolutely nothing.
My God. Could you imagine, Neil? Like, how much money that we're talking about here that you actually have to send an armored car?
These people that he was pissing off were very wealthy. And they had the means to pursue him. And that had to be scary. So a lot of this was sort of unraveling in real time on social media, because some of these folks who consigned watches with him, you know, they started to talk amongst themselves.
Yeah.
And some of them noticed that he was wearing, in some of his photos online, their watches. He was not supposed to be wearing their watches. These are very expensive watches. And he would take pictures of himself at luxury spots, and he'd have their watches on. And in some cases, he would have said he sold that watch. And then they're like, what? He didn't sell the watch. There it is. And these are savvy sellers or savvy consigners. These aren't just, you know, people who just have some junk on Craigslist.
Right.
So he got himself into a trap, Javier. It is nuts. And he's trying to figure a way to get out of it. And ultimately, he just loses his mind. And he's paying people with other people's, you know, revenue streams from selling their watches. He's running a watch Ponzi scheme.
And we're going to talk about one of those customers after the break.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop apologists.
Yeah, Neil, and let's talk about one of his customers. His name was Bob Schrober, and Anthony Ferrer had $200,000 worth of his watches in possession, and Schrober started getting worried. He's like, where's my stuff, you know? One day he goes online to the Timepiece Gentleman website, and his watches, they're not there anymore.
So what did Schrober do? He called up Anthony Ferrer. What Anthony didn't know, though, was that Bob Schrober was recording the entire conversation.
$5 million in debt. I've been a complete fucking degenerate. And I was like focused. I got a little bit of taste of success in SARS, and I thought that would never end. And for the last 2 years, that's how I've lived my life, is that it would never end. I was way too good at what I did. I was way too famous, way too popular.
If you can just bear with me, you have my word that I will start getting you paid back. I just need to find it.
And listen to this. Anthony Ferrer tells Bob Schrober, hey, don't get so stressed out. You're rich. You have lots of money. Think about all these other schmucks that I just ripped off.
You get a lot of money, dude, but you're in a better position, you know, than a lot of people out there. And, you know, a lot of people can't just say, ah, get me when you can, or, you know, we'll figure it out. A lot of people, it's gonna hurt them.
Basically, what he's doing here is he's telling Bob Schrober that, hey, I'm going to pay you back, but I got to, you know, pay back these other guys first because, you know, they really need the money. You're rich, dude.
Yeah, it's basically a delay tactic, right?
Right.
I'm admitting that, dude. It's fucking hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to admit in my life.
So, like another victim on YouTube said after listening to this secret recording that Bob Schrober did, he writes, oh, you got to feel for this guy. It's so hard to spend other people's money.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, after this 18-minute call, Bob Schrober posted the secret call on TikTok. Tick, tock, tick, tock, and then silence. Just like that, Anthony Ferrer's watch Ponzi scheme finally stopped ticking.
I love it, Javier. Time was running out, like literally. So what did Anthony do? He went on full damage control mode. So let's play more of that 14-minute confessional video that Anthony Ferrer posted on YouTube.
I'm tired of living this lie. I'm tired of the person that I was becoming. Like, I fucking hate it. You know, like it's that's what it's gotten to. And, you know, could I have kept this lie up for a little while longer? Probably. And I'm not proud of that. And I never meant to hurt anybody. And, you know, my mistakes are what dug this hole deeper and deeper and deeper to the point where if I don't stop it, I'm not going to get out. It's going to get so big that it's irreparable. Admitting those kind of things, like, it was the hardest thing. It was the most embarrassing thing. Like I said, it's hard for someone like me to admit failure, to admit defeat, to admit that I'm an alcoholic, or I have a drug problem, or I have a gambling problem, or I have a spending problem, or I've wasted money on cocaine and hookers and nights out in Vegas and just dumb shit, living this fake lifestyle to impress people that don't really care. You know, that's who I've become. And I hate it. I drink myself to sleep every night to get rid of the stress for a little bit. And this last week and a half since this stuff started coming out is where it's my breaking point. This is a rock bottom for me.
I don't know, Neil. So what do you think? What do you think about this confession? This is like the first time we're hearing a Ponzi schemer confessing. Are you buying it?
The first time I listened to it, I felt like, damn, this is sincere. This dude is really just opening up. And in fact, he was being sincere. He was telling the truth about his fraud. But do I buy it? No, because it seems to be just another way to maybe get out of it.
It's almost like a lot of these criminals, they always feel bad about it once they're caught, right?
Once
they never
caught.
Feel bad about it. Yeah, they never feel bad about it before.
When they're driving the Lambo or doing the donuts at Office Depot. Yeah. He was loving it.
Yeah, the guy was just eating it up. But, you know, this is, to me at least, this was a rare confession from a Ponzi schemer. This is like a real, we just got to see a Ponzi scheme in action, right? From beginning to end. We're always telling you how it ends.
That's so true, Javier, without any government intervention. On this show, we're always talking about, oh yeah, that's when the SEC filed its complaint. You know, the DOJ got involved, the FBI, this and that. No, this is in real time. With just
and
people,
well
vigilante, well-documented, yeah. Vigilante justice, you know, people just with money just going after each other. It's nuts.
I say we play one more clip from Anthony Farrar. What do you say?
It's too good. Let's do it.
I'm not hiding from this. I'm not turning my social media off. I'm not going to file bankruptcy. I'm not going to leave the country. I'm not going to do any of those things. The whole point was to own it and start figuring out a way to try to fix it.
So this clip, he says, I'm not hiding from this. I'm turning out my social media. You know, at this point, like he hasn't been arrested or anything, but I mean, we know it's coming, right? But like, for some reason, I get the sense that he thinks that he's going to get out of this somehow, that he's going to fix this. I mean, what do you think about that?
He's saying that, you know, hey, man, I'm going to be open. I screwed up. The business failed, but I'm going to hustle, and I'm going to make things right. I'm going to pay y'all back. You know, suddenly he's the fixer.
Yeah, let's play this TikTok video where Anthony is calling one of his clients after he was exposed.
Hey, Anthony, how's it going, man?
Hey, how are you, buddy?
Doing good. How you doing?
Hanging in there. Taking it a day at a time. Do you prefer Zelle? You got Zelle, right? I'm pulling up Chase. I'll send you a wire for the first QK payment. Well, I'll do it while you're on the phone with me. Payment. Should see that in the next 30-40 minutes, at the most an hour.
So here you are. You see this guy. He's calling a real customer. He's asking, how do you like that payment? He actually makes the payment, and you see it happen in this one short little TikTok video. But really, all he's doing is robbing one client to pay another one in order to save face and put on this show on social media, right? But the question is it working?
It's a straight Ponzi scheme.
What's up, everybody? It's day three. Unfortunately, I have not completed any sales today, nor have I made any payments. So the debt counter is not going to change at all. You know, for half a minute, like maybe I should just leave this industry. And, you know, then once I get up and I regroup, I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not hiding. I'm not going to run from something just because I got another, you know, got dealt another bad card or had something else that came against me.
And you're seeing it. This is a Ponzi scheme.
In real time.
Yeah.
Open book Ponzi on social media.
So crazy.
So it's summer of 2023. And after that initial confession video, what does Anthony do? He starts posting these daily confession videos and these daily sort of inside looks into how he's fixing the Ponzi. He's Mr. Open Book now. It's something. So let's hear another clip.
Hello.
Yo, what up?
Hey, what's up, Anthony?
I just got off the phone with Chase. It should be good. You should see it already.
Yeah, dude. Thank you, man.
Hey, what's up, man? Just wanted to know. I know last week or a couple weeks ago, I gave you a cashier's check for the balance. Today, I'm out of town, but I just sent you. I pulled your consignment agreement, and I got the wire info off there. So I just sent you a wire for $3,400. So you'll see it. It's obviously it's Saturday, so it's not going to show today, but you'll see it first thing in the morning. It'll get it pulled out. But just wanted to call and let you know that I sent that.
Cool.
All right, buddy. I'm going to mark that on my list, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hi.
All right. Thanks, man.
The only way I'm going to dig myself out of this hole and get people back on my side is showing that, one, there are still people willing to put faith in me, and then, two, I'm following up with it, and I'm doing what I'm saying I'm doing.
Man, I got to wonder about this guy. I mean, does he not have a publicist? I mean, if I were his attorney personally, I would tell him to ease up on the social media confessions, dude. It's not looking good.
Yeah, it's not going to help you in court when you want to plead not guilty, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Anthony Farrar went from eating at the most expensive sushi restaurants to eating tuna right out of a can. He no longer has his Hollywood Hills home. He reportedly sleeps in a lifeguard stand on Venice Beach. I mean, this guy went from the highest mountain to like the lowest low, right?
He sure did. And this is when the government does get involved. A lot of people were pissed off. they knew that he had now pulled this confession stunt, let's call it. He was poor. He failed. It was all just good intention. It just went wrong. But the FBI wasn't buying that, and the DOJ wasn't buying it. So what then happens? The FBI arrests him at a storage locker. Yep, his own storage locker. He had been indicted on wire fraud and mail fraud. So with this confession and public record, and Farrar having screwed over a lot of rich people, this is when the government gets involved. The FBI arrests him on the DOJ's complaint, which came quickly. And in that complaint, it read, quote, at least 20 victims contacted law enforcement officials with complaints that they had never received money from the sales of their watches or the watches that they had given him money to purchase. So Farrar was charged with wire fraud, and that's a felony that carries a statutory maximum of 20 years in a federal prison. So Farrar is no longer wearing those fancy timepieces. He was wearing those handcuffs. He was thrown in the slammer, and he was denied bond. So he's been in that slammer this whole time. He's not posting on social media. We wish he were. And so far, the trial is set for the fall of 2024, and we're going to be following it step by step and sharing that on social media.
And Neil, I want to add something here because I suspect that a lot of people who were screwed by Anthony Farrar, the timepiece gentleman, they're probably listening to this right now, right? The watch community is a pretty strong community, and we just skimmed the surface on this story. There are so many great testimonials online from people who have done business with him, people who have now feel like this is a big black eye on the industry, you know? And I just hope that we did this story right. And welcome to the Ponzi Playbook. This is what we do. We're talking about watches this time, but next time we're talking about a different kind of Ponzi scheme. But
there is a Ponzi scheme of every flavor. And I think you mentioned that on prior episodes. You know, it's like you thought at first that there couldn't possibly be enough stories out there on Ponzi schemes.
I really didn't think so.
But there's so many.
I pitched this to my agent, by the way. I don't know if I've ever told you this, Neil, but I actually pitched this podcast before we ever did it. I pitched it to my agent to see if she could shop it around to some big network. And she goes, you know what? Nah, it just doesn't have legs. And I'm like, oh my God. And I actually agreed with her at that point because I'm like, yeah, how many times can we talk about a Ponzi scheme? But really, each one is so different.
Yes, it's not all the investment advisor who, you know, the sort of classic cliche white collar criminal who just, you know, takes money from victims and buys a Mercedes-Benz and that's it. I mean, these are some crazy personalities. Look at this dude. I mean, just look at this dude. He is nuts.
Wow, Neil, that was a hell of an episode. I loved all the clips. I loved listening to this guy break this Ponzi scheme down in real time. That was awesome. But, you know, what did we learn today, Neil?
I did learn something today, Javier. Whatever you do, it's never a good time to start a Ponzi.
That was The Timepiece Gentleman. It's our latest episode of The Ponzi Playbook. If you haven't checked out The Ponzi Playbook, whip out your phone. Just type in Ponzi, and we're the first podcast that pops up. It's a pyramid with this creepy eye. Anyway, please subscribe. Take a listen to the back catalog. I think you're going to enjoy it. All right, here is a clip from the Film Nuts podcast. It's a great podcast that they talk about movies, television. And on this episode, they had me talking about the Catch Me If You Can movie. Here's a clip.
Who would play you in the movie about exposing Frank Abagnale?
Okay, my kids say that I look like Lin-Manuel Miranda or whatever, so we're just going to go with him. And if he's not available, Ray Romano or...
Who would play Frank Abagnale?
That's a good one. It would probably be like Seth Rogen or something, you know? Like,
interesting. Okay.
I don't see Leonardo DiCaprio at all right. playing Frank Abagnale. This movie needs to be made.
If that movie was about right now, like this time of exposing him, I think Henry Winkler could play a really good Frank Abagnale.
Oh, yeah.
Right
like now. The older Abagnale. Yeah. Oh, I love Henry Winkler. He would make a great Frank Abagnale. That would be awesome.
All right. That was the Film Nuts podcast. Please go support my friend Taylor. He is fantastic. It's a great podcast and YouTube series. So there's video of this and it's all shot really, really well. So if you like films, you're going to love the Film Nuts podcast. All right. See you next week.
Creative Babble.